sometimes if you go to a men's bathroom, they have these urinals. It's basically just a wall that you pee against. And sometimes they put little pictures of a fly or, you know, that, and you get to aim for it. It, you know, improves aim, and it's just a natural thing to reward the behavior they're trying to get.
Right. We need as much practice as we can get. But
how do we get to be talking about urinals on this podcast? Let's get it back. Let's clean this up.
This is Super Fast Business with James Schramko. Helping you build your business super fast.
James Schramko here. Welcome back to superfastbusiness.com. Today we're going to be talking to Mr. Bold. Welcome to the call.
You know, it's funny. That is actually what my license plate says. I was stunned. I moved from Chicago to California, and I was like, yeah, let me see if I can get that license plate. So there's 39 million people in California, only one Mr. Bold. So there you go. And I got the plate.
So, of course, I'm actually talking to Steve Olsher from steveolsher.com. And you started off as a radio DJ.
A radio DJ. A nightclub DJ, actually owned my own nightclub. Yeah, man. You know, it's like that broadcast music, you know, that production side of the equation is in the blood. And I can't do anything about it. It's there.
One of the interesting things in your bio, Steve, is that you had a non-alcoholic nightclub.
Yeah. Yeah. And don't ask what we were smoking around the table, but the name of it was the Funky Pickle. So that's what we came up with. And yeah, you know, man, at 19 years of age, I opened my own club, and we catered to the teenagers early because it was a non-alcoholic club, and went to about 11:30 or so, closed down, cleaned up, reopened at midnight, and stayed open until 4, 5, 6 in the morning for those 18 and over. And yeah, man, opened the doors when I was 19 and dropped out of that when I was about 21.
So the drinking age, is it 21?
It is 21, yeah, which is whenever people say, like, how'd you open a club when we were 19? Well, it was a non-alcoholic club. It's kind of like a youth center or something that just played music, right? I mean, that's kind of basically what we were.
And then you did the most natural thing possible and went into selling liquor online.
Well, I thought, look, man, if you're going to go from the non-alcoholic scene anyway, you might as well jump, like, straight into just go straight into the bar, right? I mean, not even you know, behind the bar. I mean, like, just ingrain yourself into the wood of the bar. And that's what I did for the next 9 years. And what you're talking about is liquor.com, which is actually a domain and a company I still own to this day.
Yeah, well, you certainly had the early mover thing. And I guess in your industry, you would have seen people come up maybe even after you or around the same time and approaching marketing a different way. I think like Gary V comes to mind, making big waves in that wine market.
Yeah.
Did you see him coming?
Very on, actually, because we launched on CompuServe's electronic mall in 1993. So that company actually started as a catalog company. And then we came online in 93 on CompuServe and built one of the first fully functional e-commerce sites in 95, which then became liquor.com in 98. And I think I saw Gary for the first time, must have been right around the turn of the century there, I think, when he and I first connected.
Well, I saw him many, many years later, like well after he was successful at a conference about 8 or 9 years ago. And that really was the benchmark for content marketing, that video content, the show based premise. It certainly has built him a huge amount of authority. And that's what I want to talk to you about today. I want to talk about influence and how you go about, firstly, finding what is your what, which is a topic of one of your books. And then once you know that, how do you make sure that other people know about you? I think that's what we'll be talking about today. So tell me about what is your what.
So what is your what is the, well, first and foremost, is the name of the book that I wrote in 2012 and subsequently put on the New York Times list. But it's also the description, if you will, of the framework that I created to help people answer that core question of why they're here, how they're most naturally wired to excel, and how they're going to impact not only those who share this lifetime with them, but also those of lifetimes to come.
So you cover legacy as well.
It's really, to me, all about legacy. Yeah, I mean, because at the end of the day, we're going to impact our folks that, you know, share this lifetime with us. But I do think that each of us has the ability to leave, you know, really leave something, leave that legacy, whatever you want to call it, that survives our, you know, physical existence here on this planet.
It's kind of why we have kids, isn't it?
Well, then there's that.
It's like wired into us to keep propagating and survive.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And don't leave them too much money, because I don't think that does anybody any good. That's just another, that's a conversation for another day.
Mine do really well at making sure that won't happen. I feel like a reverse ATM.
Nice.
You said to me once before, write the book you need, or something to that effect. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So in author land, you write the book that you most need. At least that's been said. And for me, even though I had been doing, you know, various entrepreneurial endeavor, you know, over the years, it really was a function of not really feeling comfortable in my own skin. Like, I was really just going through the motions of creating something for the sake of creating it, but not really doing something that put a fire in my soul and really just gave me the urge to jump out of bed every day in the morning. So this is kind of the byproduct, if you will, of trying the Myers-Briggs and the what color is your parachutes and the strengths finders and so on. And, you know, look, I mean, I'm not knocking the modalities, but they just really didn't get me to the answers that I needed. And so I started toying with this whole process of what do you really need to get to the point where you're not only doing something that, you know, feels as natural to you as breathing, but also is monetarily rewarding. Because, I mean, look, I'm not one of those people that'll tell you you have to succumb to life as a starving artist, you know, simply because you're compelled to draw.
Yeah, well, I covered a topic related to this in a previous episode, talking about Ikigai, the Japanese philosophy, which is similar, but like a more advanced version of the hedgehog principle that we hear about in Jim Collins' book. Mm-hmm. So there's a fair bit of discussion around finding something that you like, something that you're good at, that people will pay you for, etc. Can you tell me, in your what is your what is the process? If we're listening to this podcast, we're still not sure what we want to be when we grow up. Where do we start?
Yeah, it really begins with understanding what that core gift is. And note, I didn't say gifts, right? I believe that we each have a predominant gift. Now, it might be 51%, 49% over secondary gift, but I do believe that there is one that does outshine the other. And so, you know, as an example, it could be entertaining, could be your core gift. It could be healing. It could be enrolling. It could be protecting. I mean, there's, you know, a long list of what those core gifts could be. But that's certainly going to be step one of the equation. But you really got to think of the what is your what framework kind of like a tripod, right? Because the gift is just one part. And it's like, you know, with the Myers-Briggs thing, you know, it's like, oh, I'm an ENTF or, you know, whatever I am. It's just like, you know, it's all well and good. But it's like, you know, WTF, you know, like what do you do with that? And it's the same thing with the gift, right? It's like, that's great to know that I'm, you know, in an entertainer or communicator, you know, by nature. But now what? Which leads you then to the second part of the equation, which is understanding the vehicle. What is the primary vehicle that you will use to share that gift? So let's say, for instance, healing might be your core gift. Well, nursing could be the vehicle that you use to share that gift. Now, in and of itself, that's definitely a good step forward. But like a tripod without the third leg, it still really isn't as powerful or as effective as it could be, which leads you to the third part of the framework, which are the people. And who are the people that you're most compelled to serve? And what I have found is that most people will go through life. I mean, we're talking about, you know, 99% of the world in change will go through life without having clarity around one part of the equation, let alone all three.
Right. So if someone's thinking that they're not sure what their gift is, how do they identify that?
Well, for sake of brevity here, I mean, there is a process that I take people through, because, you know, reality is that you have to do some digging, you have to do searching. And the framework that I created, specifically going to the gift as that, you know, component here of the discussion, it's a pretty long process. I actually created something called the 7 Seeds of Your Soul, which is the exercise that is specifically designed to help you get to that core gift. Because I believe that that gift, and really your what as a whole, has chosen you, and it's not that which you have chosen. So you can choose, like, you know, when you look at your vehicle, when you look at your people, you know, those are more organic, those are more fluid, those can change throughout your life depending on circumstances and things you're exposed to, et cetera. But your gift is really, it's in your DNA, man. You know, it's like there's really nothing you can do about it other than live in denial or accept it. But for purposes of this discussion, I mean, it is a process because it's probably the most important piece, because you can't do anything about it other than bring it to the surface. The other stuff you can, you know, choose. It's really kind of the difference between the what and the why. The what you can't do anything about, the why you can choose.
One thing that I have reservations about would be to put yourself in a box and to create false barriers or limits. Certainly, if I were to think about my gift, I would say that it's definitely changed as I've gone through life. I'm at, you know, the tender age now of somewhere around 45, I think.
Well, let's talk about that, because I would actually challenge you that the gift hasn't changed. I bet you the vehicle has changed, and I bet you that the gift has changed. But I'd be curious, what the people have changed.
The thing that always confounded me was any of those personality things or whatever, I'd often end up square in the middle of four quadrants, or, you know, I could, like a horoscope, I could see every single one of them being applicable.
So when you look back, what do you believe has changed? Like, what did you do that you now look back on and you go, that was, you know, night and day to what it was that I was doing before that or after that?
Well, some of the things that stand out, I was always very systemized and analytical, but now I'm extremely creative and expressive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I would have thought there may be at other ends of the spectrum.
But what did you do with the, you know, the analytical? What was the result of that way of being, and what was the and what are the results of the creative way of being?
It made me a particularly good salesperson and able to run large businesses successfully, because I was able to solve puzzles, basically.
So I bet if we were to dig a little bit deeper, I bet you your core gift is enrolling.
Yeah, I don't know what enrolling is, so I can't answer that.
It's basically, it's like getting people to see what you see and getting them to basically subscribe to that as something that they need to either, you know, initiate or implement or consider.
Yeah, I'd say that. But then if you say other type of gift, I might relate to them as well. I'm very adaptable. Anyway, I don't want to bog it down too much, but it's interesting. And I know that listener wanting to find out more about, if you do feel like you want to go through your seven soul steps. What did you call it?
The seven seeds of your soul is what really brings to the surface.
If you want to go through the seven seeds of your soul, go and get the book, right, which is called What Is Your What? And go through it. Have some fun with it. And that's cool. But I think the interesting thing to me, and perhaps to our listener as well, let's say you're Steve Olsha, a.k.a. Mr. Bold, and you've got this fantastic book that you really needed to write, and you've written it. You mentioned, and you sort of dropped it casually, you know, New York Times bestseller. How do we orchestrate marketing to become influential with our thing? Whether we're a world-class podcast engineer, whether we're a author on any other topic, or if we're just damn good at building websites, whatever that skill is, how do we make sure that other people know that we're that good and are prepared to be enrolled?
Mm-hmm. So obviously, I mean, you've been doing this long enough to know that there are 1,000 ways to get to the same destination. From my perspective...
That's like I think there's 1,000 gifts.
Right? Yeah, exactly. But, you know, look, from my perspective, it all boils down to being willing to be polarizing.
Right.
And that takes lots of different forms, right? I mean, like, for one, part of the reason why I was able to get the book in so many hands, because to this day, I still give the book away for free, right? So, like, if you go to whatisyourwife.com/free, you can get the book for free. that was part of our process going into this, which is you have to get what you're doing into as many hands and in front of as many eyeballs as humanly possible. And sometimes that means doing things that others aren't willing to do. And it's also a matter of having really a way of being in an opinion that is not neutral, right? I mean, it's like so many people are just kind of riding that street kind of straight down the center. And for me, there's no life in the middle. You know, I mean, you can live a life in the middle, but it's always been a function of I want people to line up on, you know, on either side of me and have an opinion one way or the other. And whether you love me or you hate me, I don't care. It's really just a function of I want you to know that I was here. Right. And so before, you know, we got on this call here, I started sharing with you, you know, some of the ways that we're marketing, you know, what is your what, and we continue to market it. But it's really all about how do you touch people's soul with the work that you do. And given my background in music, given my background with DJing, et cetera, we are actually creating now a song and a video, you know, that we will put onto the charts. I mean, that is not just our goal. That will absolutely happen. I don't know of any other author that has done something similar, where they actually have taken the name of their book, the name of their movement, whatever it might be, and created a, you know, a top 40 type song with it, so that literally every time people hear this music, not only will they think, of course, of the song, but they'll think of you and they'll think of your movement. It's you got to do things, and it's all about new media, man. Really, I mean, when you come right down to it, here we are in, you know, early 2016. You got to start leveraging the tools that are available to you, and if you are going to get enough folks to know who you are and what you're doing and what you're about, so that you get those clicks, so that you get those leads, so that you get the conversation, so that you get the revenue, you have to go to where the eyeballs are. And it amazes me that so many people right now are still in this mentality of if you build it, they will come. And it just doesn't work like that.
Yeah, it's interesting you're combining different mediums. I think some of the great visionaries have been there. Movies are pretty good at that, combining soundtracks with movies.
Yeah.
And franchising them out that way. It makes sense that smaller operators like us can see what's happening in bigger markets. Like a new PlayStation game when it gets launched, there's a huge product launch around it. Posters about it coming, we get excited. They have bonus levels that you can get if you get the first edition or pre-order, etc. Mm-hmm. And some marketers are incorporating this stuff into their routine, so that'll be interesting. The song, maybe you'd share it with us on the podcast here.
Yeah, absolutely. I would be delighted to do that.
we'll play it out at the end.
Yeah.
So you got to be polarizing. You got to do what others don't do. Are you merely talking about being contrarian, or are you talking a bit more about innovation?
Both, for sure. You know, but it's also sort of a gamification, right? I mean, you got to look at what you're doing in, and you're really good about this, man. You understand the metrics, right? You understand just how all of sort of the numbers work, but numbers are really just a byproduct of a gamification process, right? It's like, how do you beat your best? And that is one of the things that we believe, I mean, we strongly believe that in this market and moving forward, that the way to really build a brand, the way to really build a company is to have others do it for you, right? I mean, we used to just beat our heads up against the wall buying, you know, media and others sort of, you know, we try to get in front of people in ways that, you know, frankly, weren't trackable and had very little ROI, whereas today, everything that you do is trackable and everything that you do has the ability to be gamified, where your people, your tribe, your core followers, whatever you want to call them, can build your business for you. You just have to incentivize them and give them a reason to do it.
Right. So how do you incentivize your followers?
So one of the ways that we do it at this juncture is we do, like, so there's a couple of tools. Is it cool to share a couple of tools?
Sure. I know every single person in business is a sucker for tools. Myself excluded, of course, but everyone
right,
else
of course.
Loves tools.
Of course.
Go for it.
And so, you know, look, you can't deny the power of Facebook, right? I mean, it's just, it is what it is, a billion users. And, you know, I mean, is it Instagram? Is it Snapchat? No, but it's its own animal and there are lots of people there. One of the tools that we really like right now is something called UpViral. And I don't know if you're familiar with UpViral or not. You've probably seen it, James. But basically what it does is it gives you the ability just through software to gamify whatever it is that you're doing, right? So it's a function of basically creating whatever that appealing, you know, magnet is, right? Whether it's a book or if it's an event or whatever it might be, and then giving people the opportunity to share it with others and basically unlock various levels. As you said, like with the game, it's the same thing except with business. And you can use this to basically get more people to become your unpaid sales force where they're doing all of your marketing for you and they get rewarded. It's a very simple, very easy tool, but it's very, very effective. And that when you can combine it with something called Connect Leads, you know, the two together, we're finding a lot of success with right now. And it's really just, it plays into gamification.
Yeah, I think gamification is going to be big and it's easy to say the word. I'm sure we're probably assuming that everyone knows what it means, but we should probably give a couple of examples. I can start with one. Every year,
sure.
Dean Jackson comes and stays here just near me. We hang out for about a week and he's often sharing stories that he gets back from the Singularity Movement and Peter Diamandis. And he's talking about staircases that have piano keys painted on them that play a sound when you walk on them. So people will take the stairs instead of the elevator. Or a rubbish bin where it's got the sound of like a missile. If you throw rubbish in it, it makes a kind of sound. So, you know, people are literally looking around for rubbish to throw in the bin so that they can hear this sound. So it basically is a great way to reward the behavior that you're trying to get.
Mm-hmm.
That's my very simple definition.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm going to apply that to the toilet, just see how kind of that goes. I think my kids would love that, right? That'd be a great tool for like popping, you know?
Well, even those, even when you, you know, if, and ladies may not be able to relate to this, but sometimes if you go to a men's bathroom, they have these urinals. It's basically just the wall that you pee against. And sometimes they put little pictures of a fly or, you know, that, and you get to aim for it. It, you know, improves aim and it's just a natural thing to reward the behavior they're trying to get.
Right. We need as much practice as we can get. But
how do we get to be talking about urinals on this podcast? Let's get it back. Let's clean this up.
So, you know, it's interesting that you bring up Peter because I mean the whole XPRIZE concept is really based upon gamification, right? Where they come up with an initiative, whatever that initiative might be. It's you know, putting people into space or literacy or whatever it might be. And they put up a prize of whatever, a million, 2 million, 10 million, whatever that prize might be. And teams around the world compete to create the solution and the winning team gets the money, right? So instead of investing a million or 2 million or 10 million into one company and try to get them to find the solution, they have these teams around the world that compete. So now you're getting 100, 200, 500, you know, $1 billion worth of R&D going into this process for the same amount of money as the initial investment of 1, 2, or 5, or 10 or whatever it might be. So, I mean, that is a perfect example of how to gamify something that, you know, how could you gamify teaching people how to read? Well, this is one of the ways to do it.
Great. So, basically, if you've found what your what is and you want to share it with the world, you're going to look at being polarizing, doing what others won't do, and having a look at some trends of gamification to see if you can get an innovative approach. So that's what you're hoping to do with the music track, is to play around with the market a bit and give them something that's fun and also is carrying your message.
Yeah, I will add to that, James, that the other side of the coin here is we often as business people focus on the wrong things, which is we focus on the front end right, which is the products and the services and the revenue, when in fact, if you look at the what is your what equation and you look at the final piece of the puzzle, which are the people that you're most compelled to serve, if you switch and realign your thinking to focus first on those people, you're going to find yourself operating in ways that are very different than when you put the products and the services first. Because I know that people go, oh, well, we do that all the time. Well, do you, right? I mean, like, really consider the people that you are most compelled to serve. Then work back from that. It's almost like, you know, starting with the offer first and then doing the curriculum.
Well, you know, Gary Halbert talked about the only advantage he would want is a starving crowd. You start with the market first, and then it's easy to find products and services that fit that market. It's way harder to find a market to fit a product or service. And I agree with you. A lot of people do this completely arse about. And they come up with this great idea. They put all this time and energy into developing a thing. All the time, you know what the driver is? It's their next mortgage payment. It was never, ever about the customer or the market they're serving. And I'm totally aligned with you on this one. I've always had this lifetime customer approach, which means, you know, one of the things I thought you were going to say, but you didn't, is that most people spend the majority of their time focusing on traffic and getting that next customer. Instead, if they just focus on serving that existing customer, they'll find many ways to expand their revenue by just offering more and more value.
Yeah.
Really, it's the secret to wealth, isn't it? Create value for many people.
It is. And, you know, Yannick Silver talks a lot about that, right? I mean, in terms of he never creates new products, in terms of he only creates products that go to an existing market, right? As opposed to it's very smart, right? I mean, it's selling new products to an existing market first before you begin finding a new market for a product. So, I mean, Yannick has his own way of looking at that. But, yeah, I mean, same concept. It's genius. Absolutely. You know, one of the things that I did want to share is one of the ways that we really have built our business and our traffic and our engagement at liquor.com to the tune of we've got about 1.6 million on the email list now. We get about 3 million uniques to the site a month. One of the things that we have found that we do very well, and this is something that I would encourage you, you know, everyone to do, is to look at your vertical in new ways and see that vertical as your, you know, as your opportunity to partner and create a dynamic that, frankly, is only available to those who are aligned with you in the start to finish process. Let me give you an example because it probably just sounds too theoretical. For example, like if you're a massage therapist, like that's your thing. Like if you think about your vertical, who's in your vertical, right? You've got people that make massage oils. You've got people that make the massage tables. You've got people who create the music, right, that you that are playing, you know, during the massage and the candles and, you know, the teas, whatever it might be, right? It's just all of those people that are in that vertical that serve in one way or the other, directly or indirectly, your client. Those are all potential partners that you could collaborate with. And that's one of the things that we do really well at liquor.com is we are consistently finding those people in our vertical and those who complement what we do to work with them and create what we would call a general co-reg type opportunity where we create this, you know, this big, huge carrot, whatever it might be as the giveaway, you know, it's tickets for four to the Super Bowl. It's, you know, you name it, right? Whatever that might be. And then we partner with people in our vertical and we all drive traffic to the same giveaway. And with the opt-in, they are agreeing to receive correspondence from all of the participating partners. So we add, I mean, on a slow month, we'll add about 50,000 subscribers to our database using just using that method alone. And then most months we'll add closer to 100,000.
Right. Well, just a couple of points on that. Great description of what you're doing there as well. I think, just in case someone's not sure what a vertical is, think of it like a river, that everything in that river, upstream or downstream, is sort of flowing the same, you know, it's in the same body of water. So it's an industry classification in this case. So that's what vertical is. So you're looking upstream and downstream and seeing what comes before or after your service, or what does every single person in the river have? And that's how you get together and you basically coordinate this vertical domination with this opt-in that you all share. And that is a very clever thing to do. By industry, vertical, certainly. There's also an alternative one, which I experimented with when I was in the Mercedes-Benz dealership. We had no marketing budget. We just when I started with the dealership, it was losing money, and my goal was to turn it around. So I had to come up with ways to generate sales without any marketing budget. So what I did is I grouped together people who shared the same customer type, and I pulled people from different verticals. So I put on events where I would bring in the best of the AMG vehicles, and I would invite an art gallery to display their art on the walls, and I would invite a wine company to supply wine to the group, and I would invite a financial planning investment bank to invite their top level customers to come and enjoy some wine and art, and I'd invite a high-end music supplier to supply the sound system and to put some displays there to expose them to the Mercedes-Benz art loving wine investment crowd. And what we did is combine, and we managed to stuff the showroom full of thousands of people by combining everyone who had a similar customer who had a non-compete situation. So it was a really great way to create an event. And then, of course, we made a free giveaway that collected the names and details of every single person that came, and we were able to pull them as well. So there's two ways to approach it we've just outlined. So if you're not already doing something like that, get around the other people in your market space and see how you can complement them. And if you can share the same type of customer, or if you can bring together an authority in your vertical, what a great technique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And as you said, I mean, you had no budget.
I had no budget at all. And one of the interesting things is, as the general manager, I took over the website and the marketing team, among every other team. And we started from scratch with the website, and we built up an email list of 10,000 people. Mm. And in Australia, we were lagging behind the United States, especially in this about 12 years ago. So, you know, 2003 or 2005, sort of when Facebook was starting and Twitter and all of that. And I came up with a good sort of opt-in that we took offline. And to this day, one of the great ways to build a great online business is to utilize offline channels, whether it's direct response marketing, attending live events, speaking for platform, publishing books, going to trade industry fairs. You can collect great lists by doing that properly. Mm-hmm. And if you combine that with an online element, you've got a nice sort of hybrid business that will have an advantage over purely online businesses or purely offline businesses.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's also interesting to look at where we are generally in terms of, you know, what are some of the ways that you can, as you said earlier, you know, how do you then take your what or whatever you want to term it as, you know, and build that movement and increase your influence, increase your authority, and get that visibility and the exposure. You know, it really boils down to making sure also, James, that you're taking advantage of, I will put the initials as SAS instead of ASS, for just because I, you know, it's better that way, but it works either way, which are, you know, the three ways of getting in front of people using what you already have through syndication, amplification, and simulcasting. And a lot of people aren't taking advantage of all of the amplification, syndication, and simulcasting opportunities out there. And I know, James, that, you know, you're obviously, you've been in the space for a while. You have a lot of written stuff as well as audio and you know, video, et cetera. one of the things that it dumbfounds me that people aren't doing is taking advantage of some of the tools like Zergnet and Outbrain and Taboola, you know, for their written content. Are you familiar with those three?
Yes, that's basically putting little featured stories underneath major publications.
Yeah, yeah, and it's extremely effective. The cost per thousand is very, very reasonable, very fair. And it can drive. I mean,
and it really blends in too. And that, as the copywriting greats said, that marketing disguised as news is going to be far more impactful. I think they call it native advertising.
Native, exactly. And I mean, with liquor.com, on a slow month, we'll put about 250,000 uniques over to the site through Zergnet alone. And on most months, it'll be 300,000 to 350,000 uniques just from Zergnet, as an example. And that's another way to think about, you know, really getting that message out to the masses in ways that are not free, but aren't nearly as expensive as you might think they would be.
Steve, this is good stuff. We've come a long way in this call. let's just wrap where we've covered so far. We've been talking with Steve Olscher, Mr. Bold. We've followed his journey from having a non-alcoholic nightclub to having an online liquor store. But we've, really importantly, we've talked about how you might go about finding what is your what. Great quote there, write the book you most need. I like that one, Steve. And once you know what your what is, how do you actually let other people know about it? We've covered the SAS formula, syndicate, amplify, simulcast. We've talked about how you can corral an entire vertical and own that space. We've talked about how you might bring in different verticals but have the same customer in common. We have talked about gamification. We've talked about gift and gifts and also Steve's great new song. So, Steve, what have I forgotten to ask you that I really should have that would be pertinent?
What do I like to do for fun?
What do you like to do for fun?
Not nearly enough. I work too damn hard.
Oh, I can't say that.
I know you don't.
I love my surfing.
I know you do, man. Now, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is my thing. I've been doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for about 16 years now.
You sound like about a brown belt.
You got it, man. Dead on. Or you saw the picture. One of the two.
Yeah, I read it on your website. But that's good. Good for you. Well, enjoy your jiu-jitsu. I hope you get to do a little more of it. Thanks for producing the stuff you have been producing. I'm sure you're helping a lot of people figure out what they're supposed to be doing in life with their core gift and what vehicle they can use to deliver that and which people they're serving. Remember, it's good to be polarizing, and you could do that with innovation. You could be contrarian. You can gamify. Steve, will you play us out with your tune?
I would be delighted, man. Let's have at it.
Do a DJ intro.
And here, right now, is the brand new single, or at least a snippet of it anyway, which is called What Is Your What?
Super fast.
Check out superfastbusiness.com.